Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning and welcome to this, the latest edition of the Burr News Facebook Live interviews. I'm joined this morning by Alan Dunch. Alan, at least until and including December the 6th, is the current chairman of the Bermuda Gaming Commission. Casino Gaming Commission, I beg your pardon. Thank you for joining us, Alan.
Pleasure.
Good of you to spare some time. Like I said, you're in the post until December the 6th. When you leave your position, how far advanced is the Gaming Commission in terms of its readiness to run gaming in Bermuda?
We've achieved quite a lot, I think, in the last two-plus years. I say two-plus years, I mean, I really start counting from the date when we hired Richard Schutz, our executive director, which was September 2015. You know, in terms of positive steps that have been taken that are discernible steps, obviously we've issued a provisional license to the Hamilton Princess. We did that in September of this year. And we've also granted some designated site status to other entities. And we've done a tremendous amount of work in terms of setting the groundwork for problem gaming and dealing with problem gaming, drafting regulations with a view to then being able to deal finally with the correspondent bank issue, which is fairly critical. So all in all, you know, I think that we've made some decent progress.
Are you as far advanced as you would like to have been?
No, frankly, we're not. Have been, as a commission, tremendously frustrated in our ongoing efforts to get things done quickly by a governmental process, and I should quickly say I'm not referring to the current government because, frankly, we haven't had any interaction with the current government. But we were and still are very frustrated by a governmental process that is not conducive to introducing a new industry into Bermuda in a timely way. And to illustrate the point that I'm making to you, we have a rather archaic, in my view, situation in Bermuda where the regulatory process which we were trying to introduce by developing regulations that are pertinent to the gaming industry all had to be approved by not just cabinet, which is understandable, but also through what is called the LegCo process in the Attorney General's chambers. And the drafting of the regulatory package and also, frankly, the amendments to the Act, which we finally did get approved, albeit not as quickly as we should have, has just dragged on because it's been stuck in the black hole of the Attorney General's chambers. And it's still stuck there. We finally, after many, many months of me really beating up on the old government, in fact, it's kind of funny, just to digress, I mean, I find it a bit entertaining, personally, that it's being suggested that the commission has been uncooperative with the current government. If the current government could see the communications that the commission has sent to the former government over the course of its existence, it pales by comparison. We finally secured the right from the former government to draft our own regulations because the Attorney General's chambers just wasn't capable of dealing with it, either because they don't have the expertise, nor do they have the time. And so we brought in experts from other jurisdictions who are gaming regulators, sat down with them, and the combination of them and legal expertise who draft, we developed over the course of about 8 months and considerable expense, a full regulatory package that I was satisfied, the commission was satisfied, would pass muster with the U.S. regulators, which was critical because the correspondent banks in the U.S. made it clear to us at a very early stage that they would not entertain the notion of being a correspondent bank until they saw our regulations and approved them. Mm-hmm. And their U.S. regulators have to approve them. Mm-hmm. So we finally finished that process in April, May of this year. And it was very frustrating for us that they were just about to be tabled under the negative resolution procedure when the election was called. So they never did get tabled.
Mm. Still haven't been tabled.
Still haven't been tabled. One of the things I have pressed the current government on is getting those regulations into force. And the only response that I ever received from them on the subject was a communication from the permanent secretary sometime in October when he finally fessed up that the regulations were back with the Attorney General's chambers, who did not approve them and were going to, I guess, redraft them from the start. And when I said to him, well, you know, don't you think that the Attorney General's chambers should at least be talking to the commission about what those regulations are all about, what they mean, how they work, et cetera, et cetera. I was told, no, the Attorney General's chambers will not deal with the commission.
I want to come back to that point about the regulations in the AG chambers, but going back to your first point about frustrations, why? Was this a lack of political will, or was it just caught up in the bureaucracy of government?
It's a very good question, Jeremy, and being charitable, I would say it's the latter. It was just caught up in the bureaucracy.
Politicians can drive it, though.
Politicians can drive it, and ultimately that's what happened. I was after several meetings with the cabinet as a whole, as well as the premier and the finance minister and our minister, I was finally able to get them to say, yes, you can go ahead and do your own drafting, in the same sort of way that the Bermuda Monetary Authority does. Mm-hmm. And the drafting was done. I mean, there were 22 sets of regulations, I think it was 22, produced. Two of them were actually tabled. You may remember it led to some debate that was contentious. And the other 20 sets are sitting waiting to be tabled. There's no reason, in my view, why they can't be tabled right away. And that will allow the next stage of the Commission's work to move on. You know, the bank issue is a critical issue.
Absolutely, yeah.
In fact, the current minister, in an interview with somebody, I can't remember who, made reference to the fact that he was leaving it with the Commission to get the bank issue sorted out. And that's fine. We've been trying to get the bank issue sorted out. But unfortunately, it is a fundamental prerequisite to that happening that we have a set of regulations for the industry in place.
So there's two issues that arise from that. One, you say the regulations are back with the AG's chambers to redraft.
That's what I understand.
Which you understand, and which you said they weren't capable or too busy to do in the first instance. The second issue we have, as of December the 7th, there'll be a new chairman of the
correct.
New chairman. And at the end of the year, there'll be a new executive director.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
Well, assuming there's a new executive director, we'll come back to that. It's an interesting aside. Assuming there is, will those factors... It sounds like a perfect storm to hold up these regulations, which you say are absolutely necessary before gaming can happen.
This is a personal
view. Your personal opinion,
I do not have any doubt at all that if the process of drafting regulations is going to start ab initio, or has started ab initio, that it will result in delay.
And if it results, just put this into perspective then. So you've given a provisional license to the Hamilton Princess.
Correct.
If it delay, when can they start gaming? When can they have a casino?
Well, that too is, if I may say so, an astute question, because the Princess group, quite understandably, have said to us, thank you very much for the provisional license, But frankly, we're not going to move forward with the development of our casino until we know, A, what the regulatory package under which we will be operating looks like, and B, whether we have a correspondent bank or a bank that we will be able to do business with. Because if they don't like the look of the regulations, they're not going to want to get into the business. And if they don't have a bank to bank their proceeds, they can't get into the business. So it really is a fundamental prerequisite to getting the initiative moving forward.
Can you just explain, for those who don't understand, who are watching now or will be watching later on the Burn News website, the importance of the banks and how that and the relationship with the banks in Bermuda? Because you keep talking about U.S. banks.
Yeah. So this was an interesting situation as well. In April of 2014, the Bermuda Bankers Association wrote to the then government to put them on notice that the issue of banking proceeds from gaming activity was considered as a high-risk form of banking, and one which the banks that they do business with in the United States didn't look upon kindly. I wasn't actually told that when I was appointed. I didn't know about this issue until, the Commission didn't know about the issue until September of 2015, almost a year and a half later. And it prompted us to go and see the local banks to get a better understanding of what this was all about. Essentially, each of the local banks in Bermuda has a sister bank, if I can put it that way to you, in the United States, through which it banks its own funds. And I don't pretend to understand the banking process, but basically, you know, the banks in Bermuda can't do business without having somebody in the United States to help them with their transactions. So in the context of banking gaming proceeds, or proceeds from gaming in industry, the correspondent banks basically don't want to have anything to do with it. Or, put another way, they don't want to have anything to do with it unless they're satisfied that it's a low-risk venture.
Which comes back to the regulations.
Precisely. Yeah. And, you know, HSBC made it clear to us that they don't do banking anywhere in the world for casinos. They just don't bank casinos. Surprising, but there you go. The other two banks told us, look, you know, if you can satisfy our correspondent banks that it's a low-risk venture, then we'll probably be happy with it, although we'll have to look at it from a business perspective. Is it worth, is the revenue that we generate from it worth the risk that might exist? But I guess most telling was that we met with one of the correspondent banks in October of 2015, and that particular bank was very down on the idea of doing business with offshore jurisdictions in the context of gaming. We met with the other correspondent bank in New York in November of 2015, and we had a much more, if you will, beneficial experience in that that particular bank said to us, look, you know, for us there's two issues. The first is, do you have a sufficiently robust regulatory regime that our regulators in domestic United States will be happy with and will pass muster? If the answer to that is yes, then the second issue for us will be, is this a business that is worth our while getting into? And that will be a business discussion between us and the bank in Bermuda. So basically they said, go away, develop your regulatory package. When it's done, bring it to us. We'll give it to our regulators. And if our regulators are happy with it, then we'll sit down and talk to the local bank about whether we're going to do the business.
So you're down, Bermuda's down to one bank who's going to cooperate on this?
Well, there's two.
I thought you said the corresponding bank said we will not deal with offshore jurisdictions.
HSBC...
Don't do it at all.
Don't do it at all.
And you mentioned another sister bank.
Clarion and NTB both have correspondent banks. I don't particularly want to associate one with the other, but certainly one was more optimistic than the other in terms of the prospects of eventually getting into the business.
So then if the regulations are done, as and when they're done, the second obstacle is proving that it's sufficient business.
Well,
for the there's
three things really. First of all, we have to get the regulations done here in Bermuda. Then we have to satisfy the U.S. regulators that they're okay.
I'm going to take that as a given because the biggest and obstacle then is going to be, is there going to be sufficient revenue?
Yep.
So sufficient profit margin for these banks.
Correct.
That could be a considerable obstacle. There's only three casinos.
It could, although I personally think that if we can satisfy the U.S. regulators that our regulatory package is robust and meets all of the necessary AML and KYC standards, ATF standards, etc., that I think it more likely than not that the correspondent banks will then give it the nod of approval from a business perspective. I've always thought the biggest hurdle was making sure we had a regulatory package that the U.S. would be happy with.
Just moving on, that's all very interesting background, very interesting indeed. We're coming to the present day.
Mm-hmm.
The minister, when I interviewed him on Burn News last Friday, said it was traditional on the arrival of a new government for the chairs of different boards and quangos to offer their resignation. You didn't offer your resignation then, in
Correct.
July. Why not?
Well, I don't agree with the minister. The problem is that he fails to distinguish between government boards that are effectively there in an advisory capacity and commissions like ours that have been established for the express purpose of being regulators. This is not an advisory commission. We don't just sit around the table and talk about things and then say, okay, why don't we give this advice to the minister? Quite the opposite. We are an independent, autonomous organization, or we're supposed to be an independent, autonomous organization, free of political interference, free of political decision-making, which regulates the new gaming industry in this island. It's just completely inappropriate to compare us to the Development Applications Board or the any government board that is a statutory board. And the other point is that you know, when the commission was established, it was expressly understood and agreed that once the commissioners were appointed, they were appointed for a term, and there would be no interference in terms of, you know, if you don't do what we want you to do, we're going to kick you out. I would never have taken the appointment if that had been the deal. Never.
I want to come on to that later on, if I may, because there are comparisons with other jurisdictions where that is possible.
Yeah. But the point is, you know, in the context of your question about why didn't I resign, I was appointed for a 4-year term.
Mm.
That term didn't run out until May of 2019. And I, first of all, didn't think it was right that the minister should ask me to resign. But much more importantly, I didn't think it was in the best interest of Bermuda for me to resign. There's lots of things going on under this roof that I felt it was important that I see through to completion before somebody came in and took over from me. And, you know, I think, Jeremy, one thing I would like to make clear is I never actually refused to resign as such. What I said to him was, this is not the right time for me to resign. There are several things that I want to finish off. And once I finish those off, if you want me to go, I'll entertain that. But, you know, I wanted to get the Princess provisional license application dealt with, which I did. I wanted to get the regulations tabled and the banking issue resolved. And I wanted to finish the process of finding a replacement for the executive director, a process which we had commenced back in August of this year. And, you know, if I'd been able to get those three things or those four things taken care of and he still wanted me to go, fine.
Just going back to your point about executive director, you touched on that and you said if there is one, a replacement.
Well, you said by the end of the year, and I was issue with
Mr. Schutz leaves at the end. Is due to leave at the end of
Mr.
the year.
Mr. Schutz is due to leave in December. And frankly, the process that we initiated to find his replacement thus far has not proven successful. And as a result of that, I think it's optimistic to think that there will be a replacement by the end of the year. Unless, of course, the government already has his replacement in mind. And I say that because I listened to your interview with the minister and I actually had a transcript made and I've studied the transcript. And he seemed to hint to you that they may have somebody in mind that they're going to put in Richard's place. I don't know. If they do, and that can be done before the end of the year, then yeah.
That's fine. A government appointment, is it? Or is it a commission appointment?
Yeah, it's a commission appointment.
Okay.
But, so, you know, I guess, you know, if this new amendment goes through and the minister says the cabinet wants Joe Bloggs to be the executive director and I'm directing the commission that Joe Bloggs is going to be the executive director, the commission will have no choice.
There's a bit of confusion about the legislation. I tried to clarify yesterday because at a press conference earlier this week announcing Caroline Mapp as your replacement, the minister seemed to say he was progressing with the legislation. He told me, I believe last week, that there'd be a decision on December the 8th at a cabinet meeting, but it's a bit unclear at the moment what's happening.
Well, you're right. I mean, what I read him to say was that the amendment act will remain on the order paper until December 8th. Now, I don't profess to be an expert in parliamentary procedure, but that suggests to me that it won't be debated until December 8th. Now, whether they're going to debate it and then put it through third reading as well and move it on to the Senate, I don't know.
Well, we'll find out in due course, but that was just an aside, really. In your opinion, obviously, why has there been so much pressure on you to resign?
I don't know.
Very public pressure as well.
I really don't know. I mean,
do you think it was politically driven? You were in an OBA appointment?
I think it probably was. I mean, you know, I'm not a member of the OBA. At least not that I'm aware of. But it's no secret that, I'm closely aligned personally, friendship-wise, with a number of high-ranking members of the former government. And it may well be that the current government took the view that I was too closely aligned with some of those people. Again, the irony of it is if the current government had actually sat down with me to discuss the interaction between the commission and the previous government, the current government would have discovered very quickly that there were periods of considerable acrimony between the commission and the former government because of our frustration over the fact that they weren't getting anything done. I mean, I can tell you there were some harsh communications that passed between myself and members of the cabinet and others in the former government. I will also say that there are no harsh communications that I'm aware of that have passed between me and the current government, because there haven't been any communications, really.
Have you met at all?
We met once. Well, I guess it depends how you define meet. The minister had a telephone conference with myself and my deputy and Mr. Schutz on the 24th of July, about a week after the election. Mm. And at that time, he seemed to be very happy with what was going on. We were due to have a follow-up telephone call a couple of weeks later to start to get into some of the issues that needed to be addressed and that he needed to become aware and familiar with. And then I got the first letter from him saying that he was asking me to consider resigning, and the telephone call got cancelled.
Was there a reason in that letter?
No. Then we did meet in person, myself, my deputy, him, and the PS on the 6th of September. At that time, he didn't specifically say to me again, "I want you to resign," but it was pretty clear he wanted me to resign. And when I asked him why he thought it was in the best interests of Bermuda for me to resign, because that was my constant question, all I got from him was that he had a boss and that he had been given a mandate to make change, and that that mandate involved him wanting me to resign. And I declined. The only reason that has ever been given to me, and I just want to, I brought the letters because I want to make sure I don't misquote, but when he wrote to me on when he wrote to me, this was the third letter, on the 20th of October, he said, "I'm inviting you to resign from your position. This invitation is made as an alternative to revoking your chairmanship," which of course he couldn't do.
At that time, yeah.
"As a result of your conduct, which has been considered to be in breach of international standards as they relate to members of the Gaming Commission. Further, it is our view that your recent public statements are not in the best interests of the government." Yeah. I went back to him and I said to him, "What are you talking about? First of all, what international standards? I mean, I'm a member of the International Association of Gaming Regulators. I don't know what that's a reference to, and to this day I don't know what it's a reference to, because I've never had a response to the question. And as to, you know, my recent public statements, I went back and I read everything, very little, that I might have said prior to this letter, and I couldn't find anything that I'd said that might be regarded as contrary to the best interests of the government. So again, I asked, "What are you talking about?" I've never had a response. And nor do I expect I'll ever have a response. And that's fine.
I mentioned the press conference that was held earlier this week by the Premier and the Minister. And there were... I'll read it. The Progressive Labour... excerpts of it. "The Progressive Labour Party government," this is from the Premier, "wants to make sure that we have a partner in the Casino Gaming Commission who is able to work with us in executing our vision for casino gaming. Goes on to say, it is important that commissions and organisations which are created by Acts of Parliament and funded by the taxpayer work cooperatively with policymakers." And then in the interview that I did with the Minister last week, he talks about the need to be able to get responsiveness from parts of government. We're not getting that level of responsiveness. There's an inference there, perhaps, if you're reading that between the lines, they're taking aim at you for not being able to work with you and not getting cooperation or responsiveness.
Well, you may be right. I don't understand that. The communications between the Commission and the current minister have effectively been one-sided. And those communications have been communications from us to the minister saying, "Minister, we need the following things to be done in order to move the initiative forward. Can you please get them done?" The regulations being one. And frankly, all we were met with was stony silence. So I don't understand those comments at all. Equally, in his ministerial statement that he read out in the House of Assembly, there was a backhanded slap in the face in that he accused the Commission of having some sort of political agenda, which, again, the correspondence couldn't make further. It couldn't be clearer that that's not the case. We were just wanting to get on with the job. And the other thing that that he said or mentioned was something about, maybe this was in the press conference, but there was a reference to us not assisting NAMLAC.
That's right.
And also not being prepared to deal with the betting shops, etc. again, bear in mind that they never actually came and talked to us about any of those things. I can only say this. My people here in the commission staff, have all been involved in the NAMLAC process for a very long time. Where we drew the line in the sand was when we were presented with questionnaires, documentation, etc., that we were asked to complete, which would have required arduous amounts of time that we didn't have. And we simply said, guys, you know, I don't have the staff to do that. I got 10 staff here. We have a job to do. I don't have the time to do this. And in any event, why are you asking us to do this? Because the CFATF review is, as I understand it, going to cover the period 2013 to 2016. Well, there wasn't a gaming industry in 2013 to 2016, so what's the relevance? And we still wonder what the relevance is, frankly. But besides that, setting that aside, we have worked with NAMLAC. There's just no two ways about it. In fact, I personally, at the very beginning, went to several NAMLAC meetings. And as far as the betting shops are concerned, the former government, once they realized that what we were telling them about the lack of regulation in the betting industry was A, correct, and B, potentially problematic in the context of the CFATF review, decided that they would like us to take the betting issues on and solve them.
Yeah.
Right? I said no to the former government. I said absolutely not. This is a problem that's of your own making. It's been in existence for many, many years. Again, I don't have the staff or the resources to deal with this issue. My brief is to get a casino open, and I'm not taking it on. We actually did provide the former government with a proposal that we got from a third party to deal with the betting issue and to do the drafting of the regulations, et cetera, et cetera. And I said to the former government, you know, if you get that all done, then I can see at some point there is wisdom in putting it all under the umbrella of an overall gaming commission, not a casino gaming, commission.
Yeah.
Now, the current government has never discussed that with us.
As I understand, they're going to give the gaming commission to the commission responsibility for that.
I was told, I think, last week, that the executive director, Richard, received an email from the permanent secretary saying that the cabinet had made a decision to put the betting issues under the umbrella of the Casino Gaming Commission. Never consulted about that.
Clearly, you didn't want it either from what you just said about the OBA.
I can honestly say that if the current government had come to the commission and said, you know, we want to continue the discussion that the old government had with you and we want you to do this, my reaction would have been the same.
Which raises the point, I digress a bit, but it's an interesting angle to go on. You didn't have the resources then. It's not going to have the resources.
We don't have the resources. I have 10 people working here in the commission. They're all working flat out, trying to get our mandate and our objectives under our mandate achieved. Now, you know, if the government wants to provide, and by the way, the funding of the commission, let me just touch on that. This is not a commission that is given a grant or just given money out of the consolidated fund pursuant to a budget. We're given a loan. All of the funding that we've received from the government thus far has been by way of loan, and we're expected to repay that.
Presumably from the licenses.
Correct.
Yeah.
And from gaming revenue.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Taxes. Now, you know, if the government wants to double our loan so that we can double our staff, then I guess we might be able to deal with some of these other issues. But the current staff level is completely inadequate to do anything other than what we have been doing.
Which then leaves a very open question as to what's going to happen with the regulation of the betting shops.
I have no idea.
No, I know. It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, really. I have no idea.
Just going back to your resignation letter, you did say there, I quote, however, far more alarming that his, the minister's, proposed amendments would compel the commission to give up its independence and follow any general directions given it by the minister. it means Bermuda's gaming industry may essentially become an arm of the government. Now, the same press conference that I keep referring to, the Premier said that, this government will not be in control of the day-to-day operations of the Gaming Commission. The headlines and news stories which have been published in that vein are inaccurate. If that's the case, everything's okay.
Look, if that's what the Premier says, that's what the Premier says, but that is not consistent with the language of the amendment. The language of the amendment couldn't be clearer. The minister has the right to give the commission directions, and the commission has to follow them. There's no limitation wording in the amendment. So, I mean, I respect the Premier. I respect what he says. But he might not be the Premier one day. Who knows? And somebody else might take a different view. The fact of the matter is that the independence of the Commission and the ability for there to be political interference is now, well, the independence is taken away, and the ability to interfere is real.
Other jurisdictions have similar legislation. I mean, the UK, Secretary of State can remove the commissioners.
With cause. With cause.
Yeah, with cause, but that's not so dissimilar to what's being proposed here, is it?
Certainly is.
Yeah, tell me why.
Well, read the amendment. The amendment says that the minister may at any time revoke the appointment of a member who is unable or unwilling to perform his duties, or in such other circumstances.
Which aren't defined.
Doesn't talk about cause. I mean, there was an interesting reference, I think, in the press conference to the BMA Act.
Yes, I was going to mention.
Which I was very curious about, and I went and looked at the BMA Act. Well, first of all, the BMA Act makes it clear that members can only be removed with cause.
Of course, right.
And there are several other pieces of legislation in Bermuda that say the same thing. None of them use these words. And I looked through, the BMA Act, and maybe I missed it. But I looked through it pretty carefully. I couldn't find anything in the BMA Act that empowered the minister to give directions to the BMA, which the BMA then had to follow. And I looked for it. Now, the minister, way back when, in his initial comments, talked about the Singapore Act. It's true. There's similar stuff in the Singapore Act. No question about that. But those provisions were specifically not included in the Bermuda Act because the Singapore form of governance is fundamentally different from governance in the Western world. And more importantly, for the business or the industry to succeed in Bermuda, it is the fact that we will have to work with the United States, the North American jurisdictions, in order to be able to operate seamlessly.
Right.
I mean, one of the things we've done, and I can't go into the detail of it because it's confidential, but we've entered into several memorandums of understanding with various jurisdictions, the UK and jurisdictions in the United States, which allow us access to information which would not otherwise be available to us. But obviously that access is subject to severe confidentiality restrictions. I fear what will happen to those memorandums of understanding as a result of this amendment, because you don't find this anywhere in the jurisdictions in the United States.
Just to be clear, presumably these Singapore banks don't deal with US banks.
I have no idea.
Just moving on, again, I just wanted to point out some similarities. Nova Scotia, the Gaming Act there, the board consists of the Deputy Minister,
Yeah, it's a wholly different model. They don't have a commission.
Okay, they have a board.
Yeah, as you rightly say, upon which the politicians sit.
They have two votes.
Fundamentally different model.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they do it that way, but gaming in Canada is dealt with on a provincial basis. I haven't had the time to go and look at what Ontario does.
I wanted to raise it because it has been pointed out as an example where there might be political interference.
And, that's what Nova Scotia's decided to do. I don't know why. But, again, my concern is how this is going to be looked upon by the jurisdictions with whom we need to have close working relationships in order to ensure that we can do our job properly.
I was going to move on to that. I mean, you mentioned the Hamilton Princess wants to see the regulations in place. How is this going to... will there be a bigger knock-on effect from the change in personnel at the Commission because of the legislative amendments that are being proposed? What's your opinion on that? Will there be a bigger knock-on effect to Bermuda's reputation, to being able to attract casinos here?
I'm not quite sure how to respond to that question, because it's not a question of attracting casinos here.
Investor confidence.
I mean, the current model is a model that is designed to give existing properties or new properties in Bermuda the opportunity to apply for and obtain a license. And as you know, they're limited in number. Unless the government changes that model.
The bigger picture, I mean, this is not particularly relevant, but we just had the Paradise Papers, which didn't reflect well on Bermuda.
No.
We're having this legislation. Is there a bigger picture here where people are going to look down the noses of Bermuda a bit and say, we're not sure what's going on?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't have the crystal ball. But I guess the best thing I can do is say to you that there's already been reaction, and it's been published here,
right,
from the international gaming press, and that reaction was fairly negative. I certainly expressed in my resignation letter my view that this was a bad amendment and one that would not be good for the long-term future of the industry in Bermuda, and I still believe that. And in fact, that's what led me to resign, was my hope that in giving him what he wanted, namely my resignation, that it would give him pause for thought as to whether or not he now needed to move forward with these amendments. And I still hope that he's having that pause for thought.
Just the last question. It has been a very public spat between the Commission and the government. We've had, as you mentioned, very unflattering media attention. I see social media, I see the rumours, I see the disinformation, the misinformation that's out there on social media. Politically and socially, is Bermuda mature enough to be ready for gaming?
Well, that's an interesting question, bearing in mind the front page of today's paper. But there is no reason why Bermuda, as a jurisdiction, cannot have a robust, well-regulated gaming industry if that's what people want. But it would be far better to be trying to achieve that in an environment where the public and third parties know that political interference cannot occur.
Okay, on that note, thank you very much for your help.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you for tuning in to BurNews Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.